WHYY is proudly supported by Penn Medicine. From groundbreaking discoveries to life-saving care, Penn Medicine's innovation is helping to change lives, one moment, one treatment, one patient at a time.
This is Fresh Air. I'm Terry Gross. This week, the government of South Africa introduced legislation aimed at further breaking down the system of apartheid. The proposed laws would allow blacks to own land and live in white areas. The new laws would repeal two of the foundations of apartheid, the Group Areas Act and the Land Acts. What was not addressed was restitution for the several million blacks who were forced out of their homes and off their land during the years of apartheid. Much has changed in South Africa in the year since Nelson Mandela has been released from jail. To get a sense of how things are today, we called two black journalists working in South Africa. A little later, we'll hear from Joe Davidson, an African-American covering South Africa for the Wall Street Journal. First, we call Johannesburg to talk with Richard Mkando, a black South African who writes for a Western wire service. He's also written for the Rand Daily Mail and the Johannesburg Star. Mkando says that repealing the Land Acts won't have an immediate impact on the lives of most black South Africans.
The actually social and economic effects of apartheid are going to take a very, very long time to remove. You should be aware that for many years, blacks have not been able to acquire any wealth. So that is a problem that the new government is going to have. And that is a problem that this government is having at the moment, because blacks are now demanding what they were supposed to have actually got many years ago. Since the government announced that the Group Areas Act, which decreed for many years where blacks and whites should live, will be abolished in July, very, very few people have moved from Soweto to the white neighborhoods. Very, very few people have moved or have managed to buy any property. Only those people like doctors and lawyers and other kind of professionals can manage to do it. But at the moment, it's going to take a very, very long time. I mean, in 10 years' time, we'll still have black townships, we'll still have white suburbs, and we'll still have those very poor conditions that are still there in the black culture. That's just like what you have in Philadelphia, although the situation wouldn't be as much as we have now.
Sure, there's no legal... There's no law forcing whites and blacks to live separately, yet there's a lot of segregation.
Exactly.
Is the Winnie Mandela trial dividing blacks in South Africa?
I wouldn't say it is dividing blacks, but what it is doing is actually worrying a lot of people because of the way the ANC has responded to the trial itself. You see, at the beginning, the ANC has said that let the law take its course. But when the trial was just about to start, the ANC released a statement saying that if the trial actually goes ahead, it will be pure harassment. So, and then what they did, they then sent some of the ANC high profile people like Nelson Mandela and Chris Hani and so on to go and accompany Mrs. Mandela. And then there were quite a number of demonstrations outside the court. That actually worries a lot of people. And the disappearance of some of the key witnesses has also worried a lot of people. So the worry that actually is being brought by the case is the fact that many people believe that justice here is on trial.
What do you mean?
Mrs. Mandela should be tried and convicted by a court of law, not by the anti-apartheid movements here. As I said, the ANC sees it as a trial for of its political activities. The government sees it as just a criminal case. What I mean is that political interference by the ANC is causing a serious problem for what kind of government we're going to have in the future. If the ANC doesn't dissociate itself from the trial at the moment, how can it be able to dissociate itself from future trials in South Africa? As an anti-apartheid figure, Mrs. Mandela should be left alone in court. Evidence should be heard. The witnesses should not be threatened by either the executive of the ANC or the ANC supporters not to give evidence. That's what I mean when I say the trial for the future justice of the country. Because if that is allowed to take place, what it means that in the future, if one of the political leaders is involved in any problems, we are going to see witnesses disappearing. We're going to see the government getting involved in the whole thing, and we are not going to have any justice at all.
Has the end of some of the apartheid laws made it any easier for you to do your job as a journalist and for you to go to places that you need to get to?
Yes, it has, in many ways, because for your information, I have managed to interview even right-wing politicians who never even spoken to blacks before. I can go to places where blacks were not allowed before, although there is still some resistance. There are not many restrictions like we used to have during the height of the state of emergency in 1986 and 87. And I can attend even a meeting or a political rally called by the ruling White National Party. I attended their Transvaal Province Congress late last year. And this couldn't have happened a long time ago.
Do police and government authorities cooperate with you and other black journalists?
Oh, of course, yes. I mean, they want to be seen to have changed. They cooperate a lot, actually. It appears to me, I mean, even the state on television now, some black journalists who work for the state television, you see them interviewing cabinet ministers, and this has never happened before.
You know, there was an article not too long ago in Newsweek that talked about pressures on black reporters in South Africa, pressures from other blacks to not report on things that would reflect badly on black South Africans. And there was even a quote from the editor of the Sowetan newspaper. He said, every black journalist in the country is receiving the severest harassment from black liberal organizations. Have you found that
quite
to
right.
be true? Yeah?
Yes, it has happened to me on many occasions. You see here, we are torn between the two.
Between two what?
Between the two, between our profession and our communities. You are supposed to be seen to be on the anti-apartheid course, even if you're a journalist who's supposed to be objective, if it is possible to be objective. To give you an example, when Mrs. Mandela was shunned by the anti-apartheid movement, we all actually watched to see what's going to happen to her. So we saw her being reincorporated into the anti-apartheid movement again. And I went on to interview people about this, and I followed her, what she's been doing. I wrote a feature about her coming back into the anti-apartheid fold. And the South African Youth Congress, which is an anti-apartheid movement which is allied to the ANC, was very upset about the story. So some of them called me to threaten me, and this has not actually happened to me alone. It has happened to many journalists. So our problem here is to be seen to be on the anti-apartheid cause while being a journalist. So if you write something that is not on the anti-apartheid cause, you're being accused of being anti-struggle.
What did you say in your article or articles about Winnie Mandela that offended black militants in South Africa, people who called and threatened you?
Well, first they objected to the fact that I said she was back into the anti-apartheid fold. They said she was never actually shunned, even if everybody was there when the United Democratic Front, an anti-apartheid alliance, called a press conference to say, from today onwards, we're not going to have anything to do with Mrs. Mandela. All I did was to go on the last stories that we had about her, about what was said about her, and what she's saying now, and what she's doing. And that's what actually upset them. And they also did not want to see anything written about Mrs. Mandela's involvement in the murder or into the assault of a young activist, which led to his death. And that's the basis of the trial now. They said I was simply repeating what has been reported before, and they think that I was working for the system. So those two things.
What are some of the changes you're hoping for in the near future now that so many of the apartheid laws are being dismantled?
Well, that's a very, very difficult question, because even if apartheid is gone, we don't know what is actually in store for us. The parties that are going to be in power haven't actually explained what they stand for. But as I said to you, a vote doesn't mean that one will be able to get everything one wanted. But the nice thing about it is that one will be able to determine his own future. I actually sincerely hope that we'll have a very democratic government, which will be able to look at all the aspects of life in South Africa and take them into consideration. My biggest worry is the education. The second one is the housing. I think the first thing that our government needs to do is to look into the great education system. Many people who are under the age of 18 are just roaming the streets, not doing anything, merely because apartheid for many years has prevented them from getting the kind of education that they wanted. When I say prevented them, I mean that you're supposed to be 18 to be able to remain in high school. Otherwise, you will be forced out to actually give way for others. And this has actually has made that a lot of people remain uneducated. I myself actually struggled to get my education. I only got my degree when I was about 22. Actually, not even 22, 26. And I started my university education when I was 22 and finished when I was 26. So that is the first priority. That is my hope, that the government of the future will be able to tackle that kind of problem.
Ruchim Kondo reports from South Africa for a Western Wire service. He spoke to us from Johannesburg. This is Fresh Air.